Hello, Dragonfly Nation. This is the Canadian Bushcraft Podcast with your host, Caleb Musgrave. And this is episode 117 of the podcast and our Halloween special. In this episode, Ride the Adventure Guy and I sat down with our good friend, Chad Redding from the Strange Familiars podcast, who hosted us earlier this month in the Appalachian Mountains of Pennsylvania in some very spooky places, showing us some of the coolest haunted places and dark history of Pennsylvania. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode, and of course, happy Halloween. You're listening to the Spooky and Strange Canadian Bushcraft Podcast with your horrifying host, Caleb Musgrave. Welcome and happy Halloween. Hey folks, so this is Caleb and Rye from the Canadian Bushcraft Podcast, and we're joined by our good friend Chad Redding, who is from the Strange Familiars podcast. So Chad, how's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good. How's it going for you guys up there?
Colder. It's getting much colder.
Yeah, it just started getting cold down here in Pennsylvania this week. So we got a little warmer, but I think it's supposed to drop down into the mid-30s. So we're not quite to winter cold yet.
Similar to the temperatures we faced when we were down there.
It's been the standard.
Yeah.
I was up near Bracebridge last week and we had some snow already. So.
Same. I went up to visit Wyerton about a week ago and there was snow everywhere.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's happening.
It's here.
Winter is coming.
You had to say it.
Yeah. Fall is just starting to, like, in South Central PA, we're just starting to get like the full colors of fall this weekend. So
I was looking at my photos and I was realizing how green everything was when still we were was. Down.
We're like, it's changing colors. And like today I was driving back down from the back hills behind my place with the dogs. And I came up to that hill where the cemetery is, and there's suddenly all the oaks were orange and dropping their leaves.
Yeah.
And I started to crest the hill and I see the big silver poplar miles and all the leaves are now yellow, where a week ago they were still fairly green. It's like, okay, yeah, fall is I think 60% of the leaves are still on the trees, but
Here you can see just the landscape and it's just like bare trees now.
Yeah.
Most of the leaves have fallen.
I'm talking about down here around right here on the lake.
Yeah.
But yeah, you go up into the hills and around Peterborough and down the highway, everything's dry, like bare bones. But yeah, so we're talking about all this driving down to Pennsylvania and stuff. We haven't really explained this to anybody yet. So back in early October, well, let's really wind back about 2 years ago, we did our Halloween podcast special where we did an entire month of just spooky content. And then last year, because of the build, we were really behind schedule. I don't think we really put out much content for the October last year.
We're moving the trailer.
Yeah. I think we did like the moose hunting episode. I think that was it for last October. But during that time, we met a gentleman through social media named Chad Redding. And Chad said, hey, I love your podcast. Love your stuff. I heard you want to camp in some ghost towns and spooky places and you can't seem to find anywhere you are. I've got a bunch of places. And we're like, yeah, man, sure. And like, we kept thinking it would one day happen. And then Chad was like, how about you just come down in early October this year and we show you some crazy stuff. And through the conversations, we realized that Chad actually worked with a different podcast that focuses on a lot of paranormal research, whatever terminology Chad prefers to use. And that podcast is called the Strange Familiars Podcast. And they asked us to come down and we decided to do a little bit of a crossover project where we record some stuff for their show, and Chad and his crew helped us record some stuff for our show. So Chad, what is the Strange Familiars podcast exactly?
Strange Familiars was actually started by my friend, Timothy Renner. He is the primary person who runs it. I just assist with a lot of some of the stuff, especially the one site episodes.
Right.
And basically, it's paranormal stuff, cryptid stuff, strange history, forgotten history, you know, and just weird things in general. So heavily, you know, Tim is a big fan of Bigfoot. So it started out heavily with Bigfoot. It also covered like a lot of the traditions here in South Central PA. We're based out of York County.
Right.
Which is right along the Susquehanna River, which is, if I think it might be, if it not is, geologically the oldest river in the world.
And you mentioned that. Yeah,
we have a lot of old things here and a lot of crazy history, and it just a lot of stuff has happened, even just in our little county. But we do travel to other places. We do travel further afield in PA, but we're basically based out of Pennsylvania.
Right. And so, what got you to find us was you are yourself a bushcraft nerd.
Yes.
You love being in the outdoors, and you run Ruck Rabbit Outdoors is your handle on Instagram and other places as well, correct?
Correct. Yes.
And so tell us a little bit about Ruck Rabbit. What do you get up to?
Well, Ruck Rabbit just started out as just a bunch of friends who went on this camp out that some of my friends call the Trail of Tears, but it really isn't as bad as they like to say.
Right.
We just started camping together. We've been doing it now for, oh gosh, I'd say going on 5 years. And we are all, you know, we all love the outdoors. We're all like bushcraft nerds like you guys. We each all have our own different kind of skill sets. You know, one guy's better at one thing, one guy's better at another. And we just, you know, like to teach each other. We just started out like sharing info and all that. And then I also like vintage camping gear. Mm. And I am a wool freak. And a backpack freak. So how the name started was originally I just collected backpacks and I love the history of them and all that. And I prefer the term ruck. Right. And you always see that iconography of the smoking rabbit.
Yeah.
Smoking rabbit legend. And I was just kind of like, well, I like that iconography. I like that legend, but it's like everybody uses it.
Right.
So, and I like rabbits. So I'm like, well, okay. I like backpacks. I like hiking. I like backpacking in Ruck Rabbit. And then it rolls off the tongue and it just kind of became this thing. And at first it was just like a little YouTube channel just to show like what I do out there. I'm not trying to be famous or anything like that. Shared like some of the trails I go to in my area, and then it kind of became like also where like on Strange Familiars, like when we go to our on-site episodes, I'll make a video and show people, because people, you know, we have people all over the world that listen to the podcast. Yeah. And a lot of them would be like, oh, we'd like to see these places. So I started just kind of just making little videos to show them like Pandemonium, parts of Michaux State Forest, and other places that we go to. Mm-hmm. And that then became, you know, as I built my, you know, started collecting like axes, I'm also an axe freak, and the vintage gear and the backpacks, and I had like a bunch of wool. I just needed to get rid of some. Right. I'm sure you guys collect like a ton of gear and eventually either, you know, give it away or sell it.
Yeah, and I'm in the middle of downsizing the entire collection because I got to move into a much smaller house. So it's been
it's not always intentional collection either. It's just you happen to buy one thing and then you buy it again.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you have three of them. Oh, I have a collection going. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how it was for me. So, you know, and also I wanted to be able to like sell the wool, especially. To give it to people to use. You know, you got people who, you know, they don't want to spend $500 for a Filson coat, you know.
Yeah.
If I can find a vintage wool coat and, you know, at a good price, or a wool pants or shirt or whatever, and I can sell it at a decent price, just enough for me to make some money and for somebody to be able to take it out in the woods and use, that's my goal. Make it affordable for everybody.
Ryan actually got to experience that. When we were down there, we stopped off in Gettysburg, and there was a thrift store, or not, a vintage clothing store. Vintage
clothing, yeah.
And there was there's Chad right there.
Chad went in the salesman mode.
Yeah.
I did.
He's like, if I didn't already have some, I would buy this right now. You should buy it. Definitely buy it.
The woman that owned the store did not have to do any work that day.
This
no.
Did a very good job for it's a
Pennsylvania institution, Woolrich.
So. Yes.
yes, it is. It was. I mean, it is a town.
Yeah.
I've been to the town and I've seen the mill. Unfortunately, it's shut down, which is very sad. It's now owned by an Italian company, or an Italian, somebody owns them over in Italy, and they moved everything over to Italy, and it no longer produces like the type clothing that it used to produce. And it's very sad. You know, it's kind of like Abercrombie and Finch used to be like a outfitter.
Yep.
And then, you know, they're now just some clothing brand. So it's sad to see that happen, especially one like Woolrich that was very, very historical and was a big part of Pennsylvania. I'm very PA proud, in case anybody hasn't figured that out by now.
You'd have to be blind and deaf to not figure it out with Chad, because it oozes out of you. Your personality is very much, we get there and Chad's like, don't worry about making any meals. We have Pennsylvania food for you here. Shoe fly pie, all this kind of stuff he's putting together. He had, what was that, bologna?
Lebanon bologna.
Lebanon bologna.
Yeah.
Just going on and on of this amazing food, by the way. Like, I'm not in any way trying to mock it. It was incredibly delicious, but also very, like, you could see his pride in his culture there. And so Chad invited us to come down, and we went to this place in the Tuscarora State Forest or State Park? State Forest?
State Forest.
Yeah. And we pull in to this place called Pandemonium. Sunday's Place, I believe, is another term for the location.
Henry's Valley.
Henry's Valley was the other place.
Yeah.
And it was... First off, just to paint the picture for those of us in Ontario, the woods here were like eerily familiar, but not. It was trees that we would recognize if you lived in southern Ontario on a mountainside, on a big foothill style mountain, but it was open country. Like, we could see hundreds of yards in certain directions.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here in Ontario, we're used to this thick understory of buckthorn and hawthorn, willows, newer growth trees,
vines and
understory brush. Yeah. It was amazingly, it looked to me, it almost looked like it was old growth. And then Chad's like, yeah, this is probably third or fourth generation growth. And I was like, holy shit, this is what your new growth looks like. This is what you're like only a few generations old forest looks like here. Cause ours up here looks much different, but it was also kind of, because of that, almost like this agoraphobic exposed kind of sensation sometimes, mm-hmm. of, oh, like if I can see everything, everything can see me. And so it was, even in the daylight, there was this kind of like, I don't want to say creepy. It wasn't creepy. Like, it was a really beautiful forest. I love camping there, but it was kind of, I guess the better word would be maybe eerie, mm-hmm. of like, oh yeah, this is really exposed forest. This is very open compared to what I'm used to. Not as badly as like the Badlands around Wyoming and stuff, but very, very open forest, which was like, you could see why everybody deer hunted there. There was a lot of bow hunters on our way into the spot, because you're not going to lose your arrow or have it deflected too badly when a deer walks through. But at night, the place changed. It got very, very eerie at night. I think it was the first night we had that windstorm come through.
Yeah, I think so.
That was the first night. There was this very strong wind all from like, as soon as we arrived till about 4 a.m, I think that wind just kept on going. And Ryan, of course, had driven the 12 hours straight pretty much on his own, because I don't drive.
Yeah, we left at 5 a.m. and got there about like 4 p.m. or something.
It was just about 5. It was like 4:45, yeah. Something like that. And like Ryan, Chad said it best when we were all kind of chilling around the fire, getting ready to start recording, getting ready to do this and that. And Ryan just standing there. And he's just slowly leaning towards the fire.
That's also just like, people always seem to think I have my eyes completely closed, but I'll just be standing over the fire looking directly down. So my eyelids look like they're 3/4 closed, but I've got the slit where I'm just entranced by the fire.
But you were tired. You were,
I was tired.
You were very tired.
You were exhausted, man. Yeah, absolutely exhausted.
By 12:30. And that's like the earliest I've ever seen you go to bed. Is 12:30. And then me and Chad decided, like, oh, I think Tom went to bed just before you did. So yeah. Chad was there with his good friend Tom Cusack.
Tom was the one who gave me permission to go to bed, because he was like, it's the first person to leave the party. You're like, okay, I'm not the idiot that's leaving
first. So. So Ryan saw Tom wander off to his tent, and Ryan's like, I'm going to my tent. And then me and Chad kind of just stayed up for an extra 2 hours, and we're just kind of shooting the breeze. And Chad had made it very clear, like, don't expect things to get really weird until like three. I'm like, okay, so I'll stay up. I got no problem staying up until 3:30 in the morning. But just before everyone went to bed, this one massive, no, that was the next night. I'm jumping ahead too far with that part, but basically,
I thought it was the first night that it fell.
No, it was because that was what spooked us, was because it fell down without any wind.
Oh yeah, that was the, okay. Yeah, you're so correct.
Just to clarify to everybody, a massive tree fell the second night and made all of us jump. It was like out of the blue, we just hear this massive tree crash to the ground. But that I'm getting my chronology confused here. So Ryan and Tom headed to SAC by about 12:31. And then Chad and I were just shooting the breeze. And we started having spooky stuff happen around 2-ish, maybe 2:30.
Roughly, yes.
Roughly, yeah. And it was just like a really, if you want to hear it, you'll be hearing it come late November or early December, potentially, on the Strange Familiars podcast, where me and Chad actually like went out and investigated. More observed. I wouldn't say investigated. We just were kind of watching everything kind of happen. And that was, it was different. I've been in spooky places and I've witnessed spooky things, as people have heard on the Halloween podcast before. This one was just, it felt more like, it just felt old. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. I know that exact feeling. First off, I've been up there numerous times, and that is old, and it's just like the bridge, you know, Eisenhower's bridge in Gettysburg. I always say that whatever's there is just old.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels different is the best way to describe it. Like, especially at the bridge, and I don't mean to take away from Pandemonium.
No.
Like, at the bridge, it's definitely, you can just feel like whatever's there just feels like older, you know, than the actual Battle of Gettysburg. Like, it's been there a long time.
Yeah.
And Pandemonium was settled in the late 1700s and then lasted, I think it was like 1912 is when the last people finally left, because there was no work or anything there. But that land feels older than the settlement itself. Whatever's going on there does feel older. I agree with you on that.
Definitely. And I think it's like, you look at like the history of that place, even the geology, like the Appalachian Mountains are older than the rings of Saturn. What? So we're talking like old land. This is some of the oldest geology there is in the Americas. And it's just like everything about that place felt old, like how big the trees were, even though those are fairly recent trees. Some of those weren't, though. Like, to explain Pandemonium for folks, what is this place, Chad? Where were we staying?
So what it was a settlement. It's called Henry's Valley, is probably the proper term for it. And basically it was a settlement that was established in the 1760s. Late 1760s, so it would have been, you know, after the Revolutionary War. And it was basically a hard mountain settlement. I mean, these people, you know, worked hard. It was a steam tannery there in the valley, down by the creek. Did I show you? I think I might have showed you guys where it was, but it was a little overgrown, so we really couldn't see the remains. And what they would do is they would go up and they would cut the hemlocks down, and they would take all the bark off for the tannin, to tan the leather. They also ran a sawmill operation. I do believe they also had some apple trees and had a little bit of a cidery. But those people worked very hard, very, very, very hard. As you saw, there's no arable soil in that valley at all. I mean,
no, it was really rocky, like, which is like what you expect with mountains. When I was in the Wyoming Black Hills, which are very old mountains in their own right, you would have maybe 2 to 3 centimeters of soil on the top of the hills. Mm-hmm. And only when you get to the very bottom of the valley would you actually see any actual proper soil, where it all got washed down over years of erosion.
Yep. And that's pretty much how that area is too. You saw down by the creek, it pretty much flattens out.
Yeah.
And
there was a lot more growth down there. That's where we started to see more, I think. And that may be why it was such an open forest, because down when we get to what you refer to as like the swampy area, it was all lush vegetation down there.
Yep. Yep. And that's where most of the soil was. Mm-hmm. So if they did do any farming, it was in that area. Right. When you think of a ghost town, you know, like when you say the term ghost town, everybody automatically thinks of like the ghost towns out west where the buildings are still intact, you know, because it's so dry out there. Here on the East Coast, especially in my area, the wood just disintegrates quickly. So the only thing left of the buildings are basically rock piles. And they didn't have any basements, so they would basically stack the rocks to get them somewhat flattened, and then they would build on top of that. So basically, if you didn't know what you were looking at, you would just assume they were just piles of rock.
Yeah, when I first got there, they looked like just massive cairns or like berms, like what we see in farm fields.
Yeah, you see a lot of just berms and rock fences and stuff around here.
And so when we first got there, that's what I assumed they were. And then you very quickly corrected us, and you look at them and it's like, oh yeah, that's like almost a square shape as the rocks slowly fell apart,
especially since they were just piles
just
all over the place. You can tell it was man-made in that sense.
Totally. But but at first, like, I thought they were like a round pile, and then we get up, it's like, no, they're actually squared, but they've just slowly fallen apart, and so they kind of have a broken edge to them now. It was such a like beautiful and kind of spooky. And of course, like, you had tulip poplars growing out of these cairns, which makes sense. Like, tulip poplars are fast growing trees. So to see a big tulip poplar on one of those mounds, yeah, I would expect that. But when we got up near the cemetery, there was that maple with the two legs, is what we were calling it, the two-legged maple.
Yeah.
That thing was ginormous.
Yes.
One of the biggest maples I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. And it was growing on top of one of these, out of the foundations of someone's house, which is like kind of gives an idea of how old this town really is. And it makes total sense when you said like everything's rots away. We were there and we were having trouble trying to find firewood.
Yep.
Even though we were in this beautiful hardwood forest with all this dead wood around us, it was all felt like oatmeal when you got an axe into it. Mm-hmm. Very, very wet, rotting wood. Like, everything decays quickly in this humid environment. I described it, I think, the first day as a temperate rainforest almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we had 6 days of rain before you guys showed up anyway. Right. So. Totally.
We brought the beautiful weather because it was like summer, blue skies, shining sun the whole time we were there.
And cold, so it was really nice to camp.
That came from Canada with us, too.
Yeah, and luckily you kept your black flies up there.
I don't remember any bugs on that trip, except for like the little critters we'd see on the ground once in a while. No mosquitoes, no deer flies, or nothing.
I see something floating around once in a while, but definitely not.
No, not bugs.
Northern Ontario style.
Yeah. It was more like those moths that come out in the fall. Yeah. I saw a lot of those, but nothing that's a real biting insect problem, which was beneficial because we got back and I think I found 4 or 5 ticks on me.
Really?
Luckily, none of them had latched on, but they were like on my clothes within a day of being home. It's like, didn't know if that was from the camping trip, because we didn't really go through any thick bush when we were camping, but I would have to, I have a bladder the size of a ping pong ball, so every like hour on the hour we had to jump out of the car and let me take a leak on the side of the highway. And some of those times I was in some pretty thick bush. You guys got some bugs down there, man. Some big ticks.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We do have ticks can be a problem here.
I believe it. You were saying that Tim wears gaiters.
Yep.
Specifically because of the ticks.
So do I at times too. we'll actually wear like now he'll impregnate his with permethrin.
Yep.
But I don't use any of that stuff on account of the animals.
Right.
So, but no, we'll wear like, I'll use a lot of military surplus just because it's cheap and it works great.
Mm-hmm.
I took a pair of British snow gaiters or like Gore-Tex, took the buckles off, and then there's like a little hole there and you just run paracord right underneath it. And then you just slide right on and you can zip them right up and they work really good. You know, and just really any time of year. I mean, I've worn them in the summer. I mean, they get a little warm, but it's better than having ticks latch onto you.
Definitely.
So,
Definitely. So we're in this ghost town for two nights, approximately 2 days as well. Mm-hmm. We got there late on Friday, left fairly reasonably early on Sunday. And we explored those woods for a couple of days. He also took us to the Albatwitch Festival, which was really fun. That was a cool little experience to go down and see. So the Albatwitch, for those who are wondering, what is an Albatwitch?
Albatwitch is a little cryptid that is along the Susquehanna River. That was another thing you got to see, was actually the Susquehanna.
Beautiful river. Massive.
And there's the old legend says that Albatwitch came from the German term apple snitch. Right. Which when you do the actually look up the etymology, that's really not what it means, because it actually means like Alba. German for elf is Alba, and the twitch actually comes from their twitching, which means to move and kind of like in a smooth manner, almost like cross-country skiing. And you'll always hear like Bigfoot accounts and all these other creatures move in that kind of smooth gliding pattern.
Right.
So the Albatwitch is actually like a little short thing, probably about 3 to 4 feet traditionally tall. They say that it lives primarily on a place called Chickie's Rock, which is like a really huge rock formation at a bend in the river above Columbia, which is a town on the Lancaster side of the Susquehanna River. The Susquehanna is the county boundary between York and Lancaster. We were on the Lancaster side at Albatwitch. And, you know, people would say that they would go have picnics up there, and the Albatwitch would steal their apples and throw apples at them. That was the one thing you'll see online. Also, they make like a whistling noise, and they supposedly make like a whip cracking noise, which could be traditional. You know, if you think about Bigfoot and other cryptids like that, crack limbs supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
And if you follow them into the woods when they're whistling, you don't come back. They also were supposedly seen by the Susquehannock Indians,
right?
Which were the native peoples that lived in this area, and they supposedly had them on their war shields. I do not know; I have not done enough research on that yet to see if that's true or not. But I do want to check into that. So there are supposedly legends amongst the First Nations of these things. And then the German people and the English and the Scotch-Irish that moved into this area, everybody here is primarily of either Scotch-Irish. When they say PA Dutch, that's actually German.
Right.
And English ancestry here is what the Europeans, colonists that moved here are of. So that is the Albatwitch.
Beautiful. And so we went from the hills, just trying to get a dog between me and Ryan right now. We went from the hills experiencing this ghost town where we saw some spooky, I'll say the word entities or beings. Don't really want to dive too much into that because I don't want to take away the actual story that you and Tim were working on.
You won't. You can say what you want.
Okay. Yeah. We saw some spooky shit. Saw some things.
Yes.
That we also had some experiences while we were there. The first night went to bed around 3 a.m. and around 3:35 in the morning, I was woken because I thought Ryan had gotten out of his tent, was walking by my hammock, but I didn't hear any actual footsteps. I just heard somebody moving past me, and then heard and saw, because we was like the weekend of the Hunter's Moon. So we actually had a really good full moon over the whole weekend. And I could see, I was hanging in my hammock with my tarp over me, and I could see and I heard someone drag their finger from the foot of my hammock along the tarp to the head of my hammock and stopped about where my shoulder is. And all the while I was looking down and seeing no footsteps and seeing no feet, no legs, no silhouette of any kind. And I just remember reaching into my jacket and pulled out my phone and checked the time. It was like 3:35. Okay, going back to sleep now. Too tired to care about this right now. We'll deal with this in the morning. That was the first night. And then the second night we had things that basically came right into the camp.
Yeah. Yeah. The second night I would say was the first night me and you both agreed we were being observed.
Yeah.
And weighed up. And then, the second night was, you know, it got a little hairy, I thought, you know, especially by like 5 in the morning and it was still dark. It was insane.
Yeah, so, I ended up sleeping by the fire for about an hour that night, around from 5 till 6, I think it was, just because I was like, you know what? The beauty of that place was it was big. Everything was big and old growth looking. The problem was there wasn't enough trees spread apart at the right distance for a hammock. So I ended up being about 100, maybe 110 yards away from the main camp. And after the entire night, I was like, you know what? I'm not freaked out, but I'm freaked out enough that I don't think it'd be good for my brain for me to walk over there and try to sleep alone that far from everybody else, because something is going to start playing in my brain. And so I was like, I'm just going to sit by the fire. I was cold that night too. It was damn cold that night.
Yeah, it did get cold that night.
And so I just put my jacket. I went over to my camp, grabbed my jacket, came back to the fire and just loaded up with wood and slept by the fire in a chair for about an hour. And then I woke up to sunrise and crawled into my hammock and stayed there until about 10:30 or 11. So those are the when we went to bed, the first night it was like 2:30 is when things got kind of good. Went to bed around 3-ish, woke up around 3:35 to that finger. And it was like a finger. It wasn't like a branch. It was that soft kind of sound of something being dragged, padded thing
what
along.
What if a leaf had fallen and then just got brushed by the wind?
That'd have to be one hell of a breeze. It wasn't a scrape. That's what I mean. Like it was a drag sound. Like when you take, if you take like your fingertip and drag that along a tarp.
Yeah.
No, take your finger pad, drag it along the tarp. That's what I saw and heard. Like it was something soft and padded. So, and I was between two tulip poplars that were like 150 feet tall with no branches low.
I was going to say, I doubt there was no low branches there.
Yeah. And it went horizontal, went from foot to head laying down. It didn't go from top. Like if I heard someone go from hit the top of my tarp and go down to the bottom, I'd be like, okay, well, maybe that was like a bug if it was that soft. But the fact that it defied gravity and went from foot to head, and I could see it poking into the tarp. It wasn't my fingertip in size. It looked a little narrower, mm-hmm. I think. My memory, like, that's the thing. Is like at this point, it's been almost a month ago. So my memory is not as keen on what happened exactly. Maybe it was more like my little finger in size than my index.
This is the moment we find out Tom Cusack doesn't actually exist.
This haunted knife maker.
Hey, Chad, you remember your buddy Tom? Tom, who's Tom? There's no Tom with us. What are you talking about?
That or like, I'm just picturing Tom. That or I'm picturing Tom with one of those extending like broomsticks with a fake hand on the end of it, just dragging it along my tarp. That's the only other explanation I have for it.
It was a piece of antler
from one of his knives.
Yeah.
Because like I could see when it all went down, I remember looking back and I could see your tent in the moonlight. I could see Ryan's tent in the moonlight. Neither of you looked disturbed. And that's when I pulled out my phone and checked the time. And then I went back to sleep.
They put a sleep spell on me. That but was the best I never, sleep I've had in a while.
I know. Like that was the funniest part was the next morning. I'm like, dude, you should have stayed up. And you're like, I am so well rested. I haven't been this well rested in like decades. I
actually got back on a sleep schedule for that trip. No one back off.
So. Gotta love it.
Well, I think that night, that first night was when you saw like the little fireball above my tent too.
Oh yeah. The first night.
Yeah.
So we were down, Chad had 3 lanterns and then we had the fire, but we hadn't really been hanging around the fire. We'd been mostly hanging around the picnic table where the 3 lanterns were. And at some point, Chad goes, do you see that up there? And I look up the hill with him, and there's what looks like the taillights of his car or Ryan's car or somebody's vehicle lit up. And it could have been from the moonlight or something. We're like, oh, that's probably just the taillight. Just it looks like it's just two, you know, eye-sized lenses. Maybe it's just being bisected by a branch or something through the woods that we're looking through. And then it just did that slow cat blink. Like it didn't. It wasn't a flash. Like you can, if there's a flicker, you can kind of chalk that up to like branches moving a shadow across from the moon and stuff. But all it was right. The fact that it was a slow, deliberate blink. It took like, I don't know, 2 seconds to close and 2 seconds to open. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't fast, but it wasn't like stupid slow. It was like a good cat blink when they're just lazily looking at you and then just do that big, slow Dolly Parton eyelash blink at you. And that's when I went, oh, that might be something more than what we thought it was. And so Chad's like, let's go up and look. And so we went up to where the cars are parked.
Famous and that's last when we started. Words.
What's that?
I said famous last words.
I was like, the whole time walking up, I was like, every single one of my brown and black friends is screaming at me right now. I'm just following the white guy routine of like, let's go towards the scary thing.
That's the Ryan way of doing
things. Every indigenous Latinx and black person I know has mocked me for this entire trip when I told them what we saw. They're like, and you went towards it? Yeah, I was following the dude that knew what he was doing, so I was following him. They're like, no, man, get the hell out of there. Smudge yourself. Get the hell out. And no, I went with him. And that it was the first night when we realized, wait, Caleb has FLIR on his camera, on his phone. So we start turning on while you were recording. I would turn on my FLIR camera and just slowly pan it back and forth, trying to pick up any readings. It wasn't the most sensitive FLIR camera you could get.
Well,
That
was the second night.
Well, it was on our way back down that we realized. So we went up and we investigated for 20 minutes. Realized we left two guys in their tents asleep in a spot where we've had some spooky encounters. Let's go back down. And as we were going back down, hey, Caleb has a FLIR camera.
I sprinkled salt around my tent. So that was good.
You got Sam and Dean Winchester nodding approval right now. As we were going back down and I was getting the FLIR camera figured out, I thought I saw the fire light back up and you went, no, the fire is over there. And I looked to my left and there's the fire or look further left and there's the fire and your three lanterns. And as I'm looking at them, I see this flame and it's like a small flame. Like literally it looks like a little bit bigger than a Bic lighter or match flame. And it goes straight up this tulip poplar as if somebody tied a match to the tail of a red squirrel and let it go. And it went whoop, right up this tree. And was gone before it ever hit the canopy. Like it went out the trunk, never got to the branches, just stopped, just disappeared. And I went, whoa, there was that, like, and I pointed right at the tree. Like it was that tree. And I can see where the flame went right up. And Chad goes, great. That's over my tent. Yeah. I was like, well, I hope you enjoy your sleep tonight, Chad, because that happened right over your tent. Cool. And we couldn't explain that one. That was one of those, like a lot of them you can kind of explain away. And I really appreciate that with working with Chad on this adventure was there was moments where we would go, whoa, there's a shimmer of light over there. Let's stop for a second and see if there's something that we can explain that about. This wasn't just two guys, you know, freaking out from every sound in the woods and every movement of the trees and stuff. This was, we were trying to discern logical explanations before we ever would take anything to the paranormal. And I really respected that about you, Chad, because I've been on so-called ghost hunts and stuff where people literally are just jumping at every shadow and trying to make everything sound supernatural, paranormal, spooky. There was this one moment where like, there's a shimmer over there. Is there a puddle over there? And Chad said, I don't remember there being a puddle over here, but let me go and look. Oh yeah, there's a puddle over here. That's just moonlight. And moments like that happened throughout the whole evening where we'd be like, okay, what was that? Let's go investigate that.
The glowing orb that I saw.
That was the second night. Ryan saw something and I think I was cutting a log. Chad was taking a nap because you were bagged, man. You were so tired.
I was exhausted.
Yeah. And suddenly these two guys, Tom and Rye, saw something and I was cutting wood and they're like, Caleb, what is that? And so what did you see, if you want to explain that part of the story?
It looked like a glowing white ball just hovering in the forest. And everything, so it just catches your eye all of a sudden. You're looking there and you can only see it from certain angles, so I got you to like stand where I was standing, look between these two trees and just look over at that. Like, what the hell is, I was like, well, I'm gonna go see what that is.
And that was the thing, is like I'm standing there with Tom now by the fire going like, well, that looks like it's over in the vicinity of the vehicles. It could be anything. I don't know, like that could be something. Like that almost looks like some of the lights we saw last night. Chad's sleeping because Chad is exhausted at this point. I think you took a nap from 9 until midnight.
Yeah. Something like that.
If my memory serves me, we let you have at least 3 hours of sleep. I know that. And it was during then when me and Tom and Ryan were trying to get the fire built back up. And Ryan just starts scooting up the hill without ever like just to clarify, he didn't really like say to the group, should I go up there? He's like, all right. And he just went up. He never even said like, I'm going up there. He just went, all right. And he just went up the hill.
I'm a man of action.
I get that. You should also tell the other men of action what is going to be the action.
Just for the record, Ryan, I'm guilty of that too. So you're not the only one.
So I'm looking up the hill and Ryan's gone now. I didn't see him go up the hill. I just looked to my left and he's gone. I'm like, Ryan? And Tom, who's right behind me, says, oh, he's going up to investigate. And I look up and I just see this shadow of Ryan's jacket going up the hill. I'm like, they're right. All my brown friends are right. White guys run towards this shit. And Ryan tucks into the parking area. And then we just hear him kind of just like, not shout it, but speak a little louder than a whisper. Yeah, it's the reflection.
Yeah, I was by the time I got halfway up the path and I could see the cars perfectly, all of a sudden I could just see it in the rear driver's side door. You could see just the big orb of the moon reflecting
right
off the window of my car. So I was like, well, while I'm up here,
might as well check everything,
grabbing stuff from the car.
And but we don't know that's happening. So me and Tom are down there and Ryan's disappeared up into the up where the cars are. And it's been a good like 3 minutes and we're hearing like things moving. Then we see the lights of his car turn on and off. We're like, okay, so it was the car. Cause now we see the orb disappear and reappear as your light flashed.
Yeah.
But what is he doing? We were just like, where did he go? Why is he there? And then you come back down with like snacks and stuff. That's... And I think the part that made me laugh the hardest that night was Ryan was like, okay, it's 2 a.m. You guys told me spooky stuff starts around 2 and nothing spooky has started. I'm going to sleep.
I was like, when we were recording that night, I was falling asleep.
Yeah.
I was just sitting there in my chair with my little Mexican poncho on and just cozying up by the fire and everything. I was like, well, we stopped the recording for a second or something. I was like, well, now that I'm here,
I'm going to sleep. And as soon as he goes over to go to sleep, oh, it's because the fire was dying. That's where we stopped. Me and Chad will get the fire built back up. So I go over with Chad's silky saw and I start sawing a log. And it wasn't, this is not laughter on you. This is laughter on how the situation was because I didn't know what was going on. So I'm sawing and Chad is standing above me stabilizing the log as I cut. And then I just hear Rye off in the distance. Guys, what the fuck was that? And so I stop. Cause I'm like, oh, maybe cause he's like 50, 60 yards away. He may have heard something. I don't know what's going on. Like maybe he heard something over there. And then Chad goes, I think it's the saw. Yeah. And there's this dead silence from Rye. And so I go, shh, shh, and I hear you move in your tent again. And I was like, it's the saw. And Chad yells, it's the saw. And you're like, oh, come on. And went to sleep. Like you could hear the tone of your voice. You were hoping it was about to be something spooky.
I'd taken the 5 minutes. I'd gone to my tent. I got undressed, got down my base layers and got into my sleeping bag, zipped up, blanket over top of me, cozying in for the night. The whole time you guys are talking and having a conversation, I can hear you guys talking. And as I lay down, all of a sudden the talking just stops. And then all of a sudden I start hearing this noise. But since it's like a saw from
a distance,
like 75, 100 yards away, that all of a sudden I was like, why did they stop talking? Are they stopping and talking? Because they're hearing this noise too. So they're like, hold up a second. Stop. So I was like, what is going on right now?
And I was so sad that it was us. I was so sad. I was hoping you were hearing, because we didn't hear much the first night because it was just so much damn wind. Like even when me and Chad were doing our walk around and kind of doing a perimeter walk and seeing lights and seeing orbs and seeing what I'll call like gray shadows. There'd be these moments where you could see something in the woods, and it's either the shadows of the trees from the moon or the moonlight. Mm-hmm. And then you would see this thing that is gray in both of those lights moving through those lenses of color. And it was those, for lack of a better term, entities or beings that we were witnessing. They were the ones that I kept seeing the most. I think I saw two or three of them over the two nights in total. Mm-hmm. And you were seeing a few other ones in different shapes and sizes. And the second night after the saw fiasco, Ryan gets to finally go to sleep. And at like 3:35, me and Chad are both like, man, like maybe we should get ready to, like, we've recorded a good amount of stuff. My recorder died. Our Zoom recorder died on us. And so we were trying to plan out, like, what should we do? What time should we get up in the morning? What's the plans for tomorrow? And as we're talking, we're still recording. Oh no, we were still recording on your recorder. That's what happened. We're recording with your recorder for Strange Familiars when both you and I see something stand up behind one of the tents. And like legit stand up. It was maybe 5 feet behind Tom's tent, 10 feet behind Tom's tent. Right in the middle of the camp.
Yeah, I would say like 5 feet behind his tent. And yeah. I didn't just see it stand up. I actually saw it like come out of the woods. Like
really?
It was coming down the hill.
Oh, and yeah, because you had stopped a couple of times and pointed out stuff. I remember that now.
Yeah, I listened back to the recordings. And I had said before, I was like, well, I just think I saw, like, before that, like 10 minutes or so before that, I'm like, I think I just, you're like, what's wrong? I'm like, I think I just saw, like, a silhouette in the moonlight, you know, and then it melted into the woods. And then, like, later on, that's when I saw this gray thing come out. It, like, stepped out and it stopped and it looked at me, and then looked at you.
Yeah.
It was after it
kind of like appeared, like it just popped out of nowhere. To me, it looked like it stood up. Like it just got taller. And the best way I can describe like the motion it made was it was looking at you, like directly at you. And then it turned and looked at me, but it turned with the motion. Like you think of an animal, like a human, a bird, a mammal, like a bear or anything. They turn their head to carry their eyes, right? Like they just turn their head at the neck. They're not going to shift their whole body. Then you look at like 1980s Michael Keaton Batman and how stiff the mask and the cowl was for him.
Yeah.
He'd have to turn his entire upper torso to look at something. It had that motion. So it was looking at Chad and then I said something and it suddenly started looking at me.
It was the ghost of the Batgirl movie. Michael Keaton was actually there.
But
it was it was just so jarring. Like it wasn't or the other night where we went, I was like, you could even though we were trying to be as, you know, critical and tangentially scientific as we can be, there's always the possibility of that question in your back of your mind, like, did I just kind of fall into the trap of believing the hype? Am I just believing my own imagination at this point? And are we just feeding off each other's imagination? This walked into camp, stood up, looked directly at you, then looked directly at me while still staying out of the firelight. Like it was spooky.
Yeah, it was on the edge. And I even said that. I mean, when I saw it, I was like, holy shit. I mean, I literally just like yelled. I was surprised.
You changed your composure very drastically. I noticed. Like that's why I jumped and turned and looked at the same thing as you were. Was I was originally facing, for lack of the directions we were, I was facing north. This was happening east.
You were facing uphill.
Yeah, I was facing uphill. This was happening to the right of me. This is how, and you were sitting to my left. So you're looking directly at it. And I was looking at it from my right. And when I saw you just stop recording and say, holy shit.
I didn't stop recording. I actually had it recorded.
Well, I mean, like you stopped like focusing on the recording.
Yeah.
You were no longer having a dialogue and an interview like what we're doing right now. You suddenly just stopped doing that and went, holy shit, and stood up. And when I stood up with you, I turned to my right and now we're both facing this thing. And it literally looked like it just stood up and kind of followed us standing up, like as if it was presenting itself to us, like we were presenting to it. And there was eyes, but I didn't see a color of the eye. I just saw like where its eyes ought to be. I think is the best way I can describe it.
Like, an impression.
Like there was a texture to it. And that was what was kind of spooky with that, was there was a texture to this thing.
Yeah, what freaked me out was just the fact that it was so close to us, you know, in camp, and it was just so close to Tom. And then he had said like the same night you had something draw their finger down your tarp. Mm-hmm. He said that something had like he was sleeping and something poked like it's a finger through its tent and was rubbing his foot.
Oh yeah, I was like trying to tickle him.
And for his credit, I'm surprised. He must have been really tired or something. But I would have been like, that would have freaked me out a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, if something was coming up and like tickling at my toe, I'd be a little like, it's just, there was weird things. Like, it was nothing ever outright aggressive or angry or malicious or dangerous. It just felt like something. It's like, I get the best description I can have of it is like, you look at those documentaries of people going into where mountain gorillas are, and then the mountain gorillas come in and kind of observe them. And they'll like go along and like pick at their shirt or take their hat off or stuff, touch their kneecap and stuff.
It's the Appalachian apes.
Could be.
Yeah. It's kind of was similar to what we had with the first time we camped there, when me and Tim camped there. For all those who want to go back and, you know, what kicked off the pandemonium, you know, check out the Strange Familiars episodes. I think there's three of them that you can listen, that you don't have to be a Patreon to listen to. And that whole thing was, and it was the same feels we had, was like, I can come into your camp, I can do what I want, and there ain't nothing you can do about it. Yeah. That's kind of the feel, you know, like, you know, this is what we can do. You know, it's never like that. Actual shape I saw when we were there was like the most I've seen, like, that close. I've seen other gray shapes there before.
Right. But that's what you mentioned to us before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I did see, like, we had, like, the first time we camped there, me and Tim, and we were taking his pack off the tree. Something had spun an old bed spring into the paracord of his pack. And you're talking, yeah, it's 5 feet off the ground. You know, a raccoon's not going to spin that in. You know, had to have been something with hands. And we had seen, you know, like I told you, footprints in the tall grass and all that. And that's another thing, too, just so you, your listeners know, there's no way you're going to get footprints up there because of the amount of detritus on the ground
and rockiness to it.
Yeah. Anything.
It's rock and leaf litter.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you'll get some near the creeks.
Yeah.
Because you did find some animal prints like near the creeks, but anything else will be more of an impression in the ground. But yeah, that was definitely a scary moment when we saw that gray thing, just because, you know, I was concerned about the safety of Tom, you know.
And that's the whole thing. It was a little too close into camp.
Exactly.
It wasn't that they were there. It was the fact that they were here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That was the first, like, really startling moments when we were there. As our other dog walks in, because now she has to be in here with us. She's hearing all these scary things and she's scared, so she wants to be with us, feel safe. That was, let's say, 3 a.m. For the next 2 hours, you and I were being just bombarded.
Yep.
With stuff. Like, things were just coming in. We were hearing, like, whacks off of trees. There was two whacks that I recall. The first night, there was a bunch of whacks, but we were chalking a lot of that up to the trees moving from the wind. The second night, it was dead silent. Like, the entire night was dead silent.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, there was no wind on the second night.
And that's what startled us when that tree came down, was because it was so dead silent. And I think, I can't remember if it was Rye, you, or Tom, who said something like, so when's the spooky stuff going to kick off? And then this tree, like, explosively collapses to the ground.
Me and Rye are standing there talking. We start running away.
Yeah, you guys just took off while I just stood there waiting to see where the canopy, because I couldn't see where the tree was going.
I
the direction it was coming from, so I ran the opposite.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, should I run up the hill or join you guys? I didn't want to have all three of us get crushed under the tree if it was you going your way. So I was trying to look for the canopy, and then I realized it's heading away from us. But that was a massive dead tree that just must have got a bunch of snot kicked out of it the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And then it finally went, oh, there's nothing supporting me by the breeze anymore. I'm just going to collapse. Oh, these guys are talking about spooky things. I should scare the shit out of them. Because it did. We all jumped. And it was A, because there's a potential Widowmaker, and B, what caused it. So we were all kind of acting chaotic for half a second until it came to the ground. It took a good, like, 3-4 seconds before it completely finished crashing. And then as the night went, we'd hear like something whack off of a tree, not like you're talking about knocking on trees to us before. And they'd be like, the right. tap, 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 or knock, knock, knock. This was like someone taking a branch as hard as they can across a tree trunk and just snapping it.
Yep. And that's exactly what we heard the first time we camped there, me and Tim. So it's the same thing. Now we heard three of them. It would be like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. We were only hearing one. And then like an hour later, we'd hear another one.
Yep. And then, you know, we had that. Was that down? Was that in from all directions? Or were we hearing that mostly down below?
That was mostly down towards the swampy area.
That's what I thought. Because that's usually where they come from.
Yeah. And we had put, like, we had done what we both thought was right. And we had been putting out offerings down near the swampy area when we first arrived and when we left. But I was also putting, like, candy offerings up near the cars. Putting out, Swedish berries and jelly beans and things like that. Just in case we had, like, my cultural spiritual beings, the Manitowoc, being in that area. We want to make sure. I just want to have our bases covered. And we were doing everything we thought that was as respectful as possible. Don't go into this stuff and be like that show Ghost Adventures, where you're like trying to pick a fight with this stuff and yelling at them and stuff. No. That's not really a good way to, if they're not bad entities or scary entities, then they're just kind of like those natural, that background energy of the space. It's not going to respond to that. It's not going to do anything to that. But if it's an actual entity or being, that's like trying to pick a fight with a grizzly bear. You can act like you're big and tough, but then when that thing bowls you over, you're not going to be having a good day. So we were at all times being as respectful as we could. When we did have kind of near to spooky, near to scary kind of, I'm not going to say altercations, but experiences. Both you and I would immediately start explaining our intentions to the space around us and being like, okay, we're not here to cause any trouble. We're just trying to bear witness to what's going on. We want to observe. And that's it. We're not here to cause you any stress. We're not here to cause you any trouble. If you want us to leave, we will leave. But we are just here to bear witness to what's going on. And I think that's one of the reasons that we were able to stay there as long as we did without getting really scared.
That, and just the fact that we all four were pretty much experienced woodsmen.
That was the benefit to it. Have you found that to be a benefit for you with strange familiars? Was going to be one of my questions for tonight. So I might as well ask it now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Has being a woodsman benefited you with the Strange Familiars podcast when you guys do your out trips?
It's actually done a lot of good things for me. It's all been beneficial. There's been nothing negative. Primarily, it helps a lot, especially being someone who's been in the woods a lot, has been in the woods at night, has camped out. I know all the night noises of my particular environment of the PA woods. So I'm familiar with a lot of the animal calls at night. I'm familiar with the animals that are around in the area. I know the sounds of trees and the wind. Right. So that helps a lot. So just to also show like how we approach on-site investigations or on-site episodes, as we call them, is we do primarily, you know, what we did up in Pandemonium, what you saw is pretty much what we do, is we just kind of go to the place and we just kind of observe and listen and just let it happen. You get a lot of these Bigfoot hunting groups or ghost hunting groups, and they go out and, like, in the Bigfoot hunting groups, they'll knock on the trees, they'll do screams or calls, whatever they want to call it. Then you'll have the ghost hunter groups. They'll go in and they'll try and bring on an interaction. We primarily don't do that. We'll go in and we do a lot of research on the area, just to know, kind of what happened there, or just to understand the place better. And we'll just go in there and we'll just, let it happen. We do I always share water and share food, and I do that even when I'm camping. So that's something I do all the time. Once in a blue moon, we might do a knock, especially if if we feel that it is warranted, but that's very, very rare. We do a lot of talking to the woods, as we call it.
Right.
At this point, it's kind of like we'll describe it as like the Eye of Sauron for those who are familiar with the Tolkien lore. So when you put that one ring on, you know, the eye is focused on you. It's kind of like once you like kind of are paying attention to this world, it just like a lot of times me and Tim will just go hiking just for fun. And the next thing you know, if there's something in the area, it likes to say hi.
Right.
So we don't go looking for it all the time. It just kind of seems to happen, you know, and we find that's the best way to be, is just to kind of just be there. And just, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And I told you that night, you know, I said, I can't guarantee this stuff's going to happen. We don't do anything to antagonize, right, as you said, or to bring it on, because, you know, it can get really spooky at times. You know, there's been once or twice where we were downright, I would say, terrified. Or right, there was times like, it's time to leave. You know, you get that feeling, it's time to go. And we usually listen to that gut instinct, and it has served us well. Another option is it also helps from the safety aspect. You know, when we're camping, I look for widowmakers. You know, I know how to properly make a campfire, how to set things up. My friend Tim has MS, so I have to really, you know, his safety is paramount to me, and whoever else is with us. I kind of take that lead on the safety aspect of it, and it helps a lot with that as far as safety goes.
Totally.
You know.
And so, with that wood lore, woodcraft skills, it's really easy, as you were saying earlier, like, you know the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many people get spooked in the woods from the sound of a ruffed grouse?
Yep.
Or squirrels hopping through, or just simply like leaves falling. I was on a camping trip where somebody thought that there was someone like stalking them quietly through the woods, and it turned out it was acorns dropping. And so every few minutes they would hear another step, and they would try to scurry past, and they were in an oak forest. So all the acorns were coming down individually one by one, and then they didn't realize at all. And I was with them that night, and I came by, I was like, everything okay? They were kind of freaked out looking. And sure enough, they're like, you don't hear that? Like, there it is again. And I stopped and paused. I'm like, you mean through the acorns? No, that right there. I'm like, yeah, that's an acorn. That's an acorn dropping out of that oak tree. Similar thing happened when I was young, when I was 15 years old. We were so sure that we were being stalked by an invisible entity in our camp, because it would walk right through the camp as the fire would start to die down. So we'd build the fire back up and we'd hear it like walk off. And then as soon as that fire would start to die down again, it would start to come back through again. And this happened 8 or 9 times. And finally I rummaged into my backpack and pulled out this jack light of mine, this spotlight of mine, and was fiddling around trying to get the batteries to work right and turn it on as my buddy yelled, it's coming right at us. And I turned on the light, and it was a deer mouse hopping through the brush. We just see these leaves explode on the one side of the fire, and this mouse hops over the embers of our fire and keeps on. And it's easy to fall into that, of thinking everything's scary. So the fact that you have that natural woodcraft that's been in there from just experience in the woods, you know that those sounds, what those would sound. And you also know what isn't supposed to sound right. We've talked about in our scary episodes a couple of years back, in our Halloween episodes, and on the stuff that we talked to you about on Strange Familiars, which will be coming out in November, December-ish, that there's just a certain vibe you get. Of things are different out here, and you'll notice people that are not used to the woods, or people who are, I don't want to use the word shut off, but I guess that's the safest word to use for it, where they don't notice it, and you'll be suddenly like, oh, there's a vibe that's a little bit different right now. And that could be anything from, you know, Bigfoot to a microburst to a bear coming into camp, or you're about to turn the corner and bump into a bear. There's just this vibe you get that things are a little different right now. And that's just that could be looked at as a sixth sense kind of thing. But I think it's more when you know what the baseline symphony of the environment is supposed to be like. When something that is out of tune happens, you know. you pick up on it quick when you listen to a lot of music from one specific orchestra, and the one time their tuba player is out of tune or out of line, you notice it.
Yeah, I agree. That definitely tracks. And then there are just some areas that are just odd, you know. Yeah. The Pandemonium is one of them.
I would concur, Doctor. That was a different, as I said before, I've been in spooky places before. I've been in genuinely documented haunted places, and that place was at a different level. I wouldn't say it was terrified at any time or truly scared at any time, but there was like that one 5 a.m. where I was like, I'm going to stay by the fire for the night.
Yep.
Where it just felt like if I stay out there, there's going to be more chaos. My life can be on the line, but I'm not going to have a good sleep. So I'm just going to stay by this fire. And even then, when I was sitting by that fire, I remember throughout the whole hour trying to sleep there of having the feeling of something like literally 5 feet behind me, just egging me on, trying to bother me, and me just being like, nope, just bundle up in my jacket going, nope, nope, staying right here. I'm not looking behind me. I'm going to sleep. Leave me alone. And I think that was the safest I've ever been in an environment like that. It was a very unique experience to be in, was up in Pandemonium. And then you took us down. So we stayed the first two nights in Pandemonium. And then on the third night that we were down there, we were down for 4 days in total. Was it?
Yeah.
4 days?
We left on the Friday, came back on the Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And Sunday night, you took us to Chincoppin Hills. And we stayed at that campground. And that's just about 35 minutes outside of Gettysburg.
Yep.
And that was what it was you took us down to Gettysburg, and the Sunday night, you took us to the two bridges, Eisenhower, and what was the other one? Starts with an S?
Saxbridge. Yeah, and Saxbridge is the wooden covered bridge.
Yes.
So if you look up haunted bridges, that will be the one that comes up on Gettysburg.
Right.
So the metal bridge was not very well known. Until we did the work that we did.
Right.
So it was more known locally, and there's a lot of local lore, but now I think since we did the 300th episode, we did what we did was a thin volume book with a audio code. So you can it's actually an episode, so you can hear what we heard. And
So in the book, there's the link, and you type that link, and you got access to that episode.
Yeah, when you buy the book, you also have to buy the link. I think I did give you the link.
You did,
I think
yes.
You got the link. And you can listen to the audio of the book. It actually will read the book for you, and then you'll hear all the sounds and stuff we heard. And that was 2 years of research and just hanging out at that bridge for like all night long. You know, yeah. Talking to people who came, you know, we put a lot of, you know, we just ringed every little bit of lore and what we could find out of that small location.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But we went to the Saxbridge, which is the famous one.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to the Metal Bridge, which is where most of the stuff happens, contrary to what people say at Saxbridge.
Right. When we were at Saxbridge, we didn't have much of anything really go on. I think that was also because there's just so many people and much activity and a lot of distraction going on.
Mm-hmm.
But we recorded a good portion of what's going to be coming up on this episode after this part of the interview. It was at Saxbridge. We spent a lot of our time recording at Saxbridge, but it was the other bridge was Eisenhower?
Yes, or... Eisenhower Brown. It's John D. Eisenhower Bridge. And what it is a metal pipe truss bridge.
Right.
That goes across Willoughby Run. We did record there a little bit, did we not?
We did. We recorded there. We crossed the bridge, I think in total three times. Four times.
Yeah.
Twice in total. We went back.
We walked down the road a little bit too.
Yeah. And at one point, Ryan saw it. I never saw it at all. That black cat. You saw a cat crossing the trail when we crossed the bridge.
It came out of the farmer's fields or something.
I couldn't see the cat at all. I kept, and I think at one point I said, I think I see it, but I really didn't. I can't figure out why I couldn't see that cat. Yeah, but I
walked about 10, 15 yards and then took that right onto the private property.
Right.
So,
yeah, I never saw the cat, but that was, it was like weirdly timed because it was like right after Chad was describing things along the lines of like, things happen out here, you'll see wildlife that you don't expect to see, yada yada yada, and then bam, you're like, there's a cat in front of us, it's black. Oh, cool. And then when we were coming back, we kept hearing like this sloshing, chomping, chewing, and we were all being like, what is that? And we're looking down with our flashlights, and at the last second Ryan identified a beaver there in the creek, and Chad was really excited with that because there's not really any beaver down that way, so
not a lot.
I'm convinced in the sense of cryptid in that sense.
I'm convinced you guys brought it along in your trunk or something. It released it.
We held a beaver for 3 days.
It was part of the exchange program between Pennsylvania and Canada.
Yeah, I mean, we had a good cultural exchange happening. You were giving us shoe fly pie, and we were giving you butter tarts, and
you're talking about all the man-made lakes they have down there. So we're gonna about to give you some beaver-made lakes.
Yeah,
we'll be able to turn into a small lake. You have a
that would be cool
near Gettysburg.
Well, you also you guys accidentally planted some manumin too on the battlefield.
yes, we did. I'm not sure if we'll ever be welcome back if that grows.
That one grain, I
thought. One grain.
On a fucking little round top.
Ryan was just emptying his camera case, packing everything away. We had a really good time on Monday. So this wasn't all just going out and seeing scary stuff. This was also trying to see more spooky stuff. This was about trying to learn more about the heritage and the history in that landscape. And to realize like where we were staying was near the Tuscarora Trail, and where the Tuscarora people went high up through the foothills and the Appalachian instead of going down into the valleys because of people like the Paxton boys. All the way to French and Indian Wars. War of 1812 was nearby to that area.
Yeah, it's just the area.
And then Gettysburg, which is Civil War, one of the massive turning points of the Civil War. And going to the actual battlefield. I'd never been there before in my life. I know that you had been there.
I've been to Gettysburg once before.
Yeah.
We went down the Virginia Beach, and then on our way back up, we stopped in Gettysburg and went to the train station and everything that. So
that was my, like, I've driven through Pennsylvania, but I never stayed in Pennsylvania. And first off, to anyone who wants to go and explore something that feels really familiar, and not trying to make a pun here because of the podcast, but also kind of not like a familiar stranger, kind of a strange familiar. Pennsylvania forests. It feels like our woods, but completely different. Mm-hmm. It's incredible, beautiful landscape. Chincoppin Hills was beautiful. You know, Sunday's Place or Henry's Valley, Pandemonium, whatever you want to call it. Absolutely gorgeous, beautiful landscape. And then you get to Gettysburg and you see like Devil's Gap. Is it Devil's Gap or Devil's Den?
Devil's Den.
And Little Round Top, Big Round Top, the whole battlefield, and hearing from you as a history buff, giving us the breakdown of how the battle was between the Texas sharpshooters and the artillery from the Union and everything else. It was, and then seeing the wear marks on the stone, from where how many million people have now crossed those rocks, looking around and exploring those rocks. It was, I found that more unnerving than the woods.
We see the black and white photos and just covered in trees and everything. Yeah. It's all cleared out for the road and the parking area next to it. Mm-hmm.
It felt unnerving to walk in that space, knowing of how many 28,000 Confederates, 25,000 Union dead.
Wasn't that for the whole war?
I can't remember exactly a huge amount at Gettysburg. Let me Google
this.
I can't remember the exact figures myself.
3 days.
Yeah, because I Googled it when we were down there. I'm pretty sure it's 28, but I'm going to keep talking.
I think it was like 51 total over the 3 days or so. I want to say I'm not no expert, but
Yeah, 23. So was, Union casualties are 23,000. Confederates had lost 28,000 men. Yeah, just over those 3 days in that one spot. So just a little over 50,000 people.
Yeah.
Just absurd.
And the fields all around Gettysburg is just all these little battles going on. And
yeah.
And I even went back and watched Gettysburg. I was up at my uncle's cottage and he had it on DVD. So I was like, oh,
there you go.
I'll watch Gettysburg just to kind of refresh and see what else historical happened.
Jeff. Yeah, you guys only saw a small section of it. So
yeah. And that's the part that like we went around, looked at a few different things as we were there, but like it's a drop in the bucket of the amount of history in that space.
Well, you just drive around it. It's like just like a big old farming area, but at the same time, there's all these little micro pockets of these certain battles happened here, and you could spend a whole week there at each little monument. And
even like when we went into the town of Gettysburg and we went to that parking garage, that was the one, like it's a historic town, so the streets are still the same size caliber what you'd see back in like the 1800s, 1900s, and so traffic was a bit of a nightmare. It was also a long weekend, holiday weekend.
A lot of tourists.
Yes.
A lot of ghost tours when we drove through.
Yes, that too.
Yes. And, it has a ghost economy.
We get to the parking garage, and while we're waiting to get the tickets and stuff for the parking, me and Chad kind of look over, and there's a plaque about the Revolutionary War. It's like, so more than just Civil War happened in this space. And Lord knows how many territorial skirmishes between different indigenous nations and then indigenous peoples with the locals. Who knows how much history has really happened in that space? Like it's a really
lot. For that. A lot.
I believe it.
There was a lot of indigenous skirmishes because of the, I didn't get a chance to show you guys, but the old quarry that the indigenous people used to mine the rhyolite out, which was close to Chinaquin Hills, where you guys were staying. And then you had the fighting between, even before the Civil War, when the colonies were established, because Pennsylvania and Maryland actually fought battles over that area because Maryland was trying to claim it.
Right.
And then you had fighting also from the French and Indian War in that area also. Mm-hmm. So that ground has been contested for a very, very long time. So,
and you can kind of see why. Like, the Susquehanna River is going to be a major way to transport stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, just that alone for being able to move resources across the country, it's going to be a valuable place. But then you look at how much agriculture there is because you have all those mountains that have been slowly eroding and pushing their nutrients downhill. And Gettysburg is the perfect floodplain of ancient rivers and lakes. So look at how much farmland we saw when we were driving through that space. It makes total sense. Even up in the foothills and into the Appalachian Mountains, you see old farms and you see old homesteads as you're driving up and down. It's fertile ground. Mm-hmm. And very so it's going to be heavily contested by different nations, whether it's indigenous nations or different groups of American colonists or a mix of both. It makes total sense.
Plus the Appalachians are just, like you said before, they're old.
Yeah.
And they have their own secrets, totally. You know, even before people, you know, so it's, I live in a unique area. And I'm very, very proud of where I live. And, you know, I count my blessings on it.
I believe it.
So.
Well, Chad, I want to thank you for all this time to sit down. We're chatting over the computer for this part of the episodes. It's going to be a two-part in total. This will be part two for anybody that's curious. This is part two of the podcast. The first part is, of course, all the recordings. This is kind of our debrief of what we all went through and experienced. Ryan, what were your favorite memories of the trip before we end? I kind of want to think about our favorite moments of that because I definitely want to go back, but I want to hear from you.
I think just getting off the beaten path. Mm. Like when you go on road trips, you're tending to stick to the highways and the freeways. and just going up down I-90 and everything like that. But like to actually pull off the highway, get off into the hills, going through those valleys where we're just driving forever on a single valley road, seeing people pulled off to the side hunting, and then you finally actually you're in the thick of the culture and everything there, not just where the tourists go, let's go to Philly and see the Liberty Bell sort of thing. And even though we did that sort of with Gettysburg, but at the same time going off to these little lesser known spots where you're not pulling up and then all of a sudden there's 60 other SUVs parked on the side and you're seeing a little info station come get your flags and your snacks and stuff like that. So it's like nice to actually get into the landscape somewhere off the beaten trail like Pandemonium.
Definitely.
And even just the little spots along the way, you can throw a stone in any direction and there's a new historical story to be told of that certain spot, like the furnaces we
The big furnaces for the slag.
Yeah, right at the halfway point of the Appalachian Trail. So,
yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, you guys, yeah, you didn't even get to see that. The actual halfway point for the AT is not far from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it was that just... something like I think I mentioned on the recordings before, like Canada as a settlement is 155 years old or so. So there's the native history of the area and then the just the people that were overflowing and using it as a territory before for the old trade routes and stuff. But you don't have these huge towns and old ghost towns really there. Like when we were researching to do this kind of stuff,
that was a problem.
That was like, where do you find stuff? It's all like old milling towns and stuff for the logging industry and stuff. But
you're trying to find places and you're like, oh, York is haunted. Can we camp at Fort York? No. Okay. So we can't do that episode. Okay. Let's try this place. Oh, that's also not. Because it's a national historic site, you can't camp over. Just like
the population of Canada, most of the history happens within 50 kilometers of the border with the U.S.
Yep.
So you can go anywhere. And this was just Pennsylvania. And then if you go down to Virginia, there's probably a brand new things to learn about. And you go out west, and there's more to learn. Next time we're going to do the Oregon Trail and retrace the
Canadian bushcraft does the Oregon Trail. Caleb dies of dysentery.
Somewhere where like you look at these gravestones and the person was older than Canada itself.
Yeah.
So you're just imagining before even Canada was settled, any of that shit happened. There was people with their little tiny village in the Appalachian Mountains. So
just eking out a living.
Just living on a pile of rocks in their log cabin, and they had their little beautiful town, and it was life for them. So
having blood feuds and everything like that, those kinds of stories that you're telling us when we were there of like the gentleman that was shot when he was out hunting. And then what, within a month, somebody burned his house down.
Yeah. It burned his wife's house down. Yeah.
Yeah. Just
like,
crazy parts of history.
Go ahead. I was going to say he was supposed to meet somebody up turkey hunting up the mountain from the town, and he never showed up. And then he found him the next day leaning up against a tree, and he had been shot in the back, and his gun was leaning up against, you know, away from him. And in a small town like that, they had to have known who done it. And it actually, the news, they actually made it to York, you know, down here in York County, which is like an hour and a half south. So, you know, it was a big enough event in that small town. But, and then like, not long after that, his wife's house burnt down, you know, yeah, it had to have been connected somehow, you know what I mean?
Yeah, some Hatfield McCoy kind of shit going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, the one morning when we went to the Albatwitch Festival, we were driving out of the mountains, and first off, like, it's just beautiful terrain, just beautiful landscapes, but we were getting along this one spot, and I think Chad said, hey, look, I think that might be an eagle. And I said, and I looked, I was like, oh, probably more like a turkey vulture. Boom, there's three bald eagles flying around just right there. And it's like, of course, in America, we saw three bald eagles on the first morning we're here. Cool. But also, it's just this beautiful, like, habitat where the tracking in that creek, like, there was so much diversity of botany. For me, was one of the most fascinating parts. Like, we're walking along in our campsite, just where we were camping, and you're identifying sassafras and spice bush. And then I was finding the bear corn parasitic plant that was growing there, all this botanical wealth in those mountains. Like, I think that was my favorite part, was just seeing old friends in higher volume, because up where we are, you'll find bear corn maybe one every 3-4 acres of the same kind of habitat, one plant of it. Like, it's not a heavily growing plant in our area. It was half of the forest floor around my hammock. Mm-hmm. And then seeing tea berry or wintergreen, whatever you want to call it, and partridge berry was there, and all this plant life that I'm so used to seeing here, but in massive volume. And the tulip pop, like, I've loved tulip poplar since I lived in Indiana. Oh God, 2007. How far back is that? 15 years ago. Yeah, 15 years ago. I hadn't seen tulip poplars of that amount in 15 years. And just loving seeing them, and everywhere we were. And the history was just so fascinating. Whether it was the local small history, like what Ryan was just talking about, of those small towns eking out their survival, or the history of Gettysburg, or the history of those furnaces when we stopped off near the AT. It was just amazing to see all this stuff. And as Ryan was saying, like, older than Canada, older than the history of this confederated nation here, you guys were doing all this amazing stuff down there. The magnitude of it all, just how much of it is around.
Well, it's, you just see the generations, especially like Columbia and the Susquehanna,
mm-hmm.
and you see the old foundation of the bridge that used to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
And even the bridge that's there now must be at least 70 years old.
At least.
The big concrete boom in the 50s and such. So, yeah, just seeing just generations of relics and everything. Like, even Toronto, you don't see a lot of history because there was a big fire back in the day in Toronto, which took out a lot of the area around the distillery district.
Yep.
So that's why people go to Montreal and you see all these cobblestone streets and these old buildings. Mm-hmm. Like, so much history there. You go to Quebec City, so much history.
Trois-Rivières.
You go to Toronto, a lot of that burned down. So you just see the concrete jungle these days. You don't. You get to see the fort that's there.
Yeah, that's about it.
And that's,
Black Creek.
Yeah, so that's like in the surrounding areas, there's little things like Black Creek, Pioneer Village. There's St. Marie Among the Hurons.
Yeah,
in the surrounding.
But a lot of that's all reconstruction.
Yeah.
Like severe reconstruction where you go down Gettysburg and stuff.
There's parts near me as well in Pickering that it's like it's old farmhouses from the late 1800s and stuff. So
yeah, it's there.
A lot more Victorian era history around that area. So
yeah. It was a genuine pleasure. And I want to make it very clear to our listeners, this is not our final trip. I'm going back to Pennsylvania. Every time I go to the States, I fall in love with a different place. The first time was Indiana. The second time was Texas. The third time was Wyoming. And now it's Pennsylvania. I got to go to Pennsylvania more. So
we'll spend a full week next time.
Yeah.
Since it's 2 days of 10-hour travel each way sort of thing.
Minimum.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was hard on you guys. And I try. I know I was like, we got to go see this. We got to go see that. You know what I mean?
Oh, we were loving it, but at the same time, our bodies were just like, no more.
There's only so much you can do all day.
Yeah.
Even on the third day, we left Gettysburg at 6 p.m.
Yeah.
Stopped a couple times for gas and once for McDonald's. And then
McDonald's.
Got home at 4 a.m.
Was that your first time going to a truck stop? I can't remember.
I've been to the truck stop.
I thought
before,
so.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the conversation was, but it was, we get to this McDonald's and we were just leaving Pennsylvania. We're like, let's get some dinner. Oh, there's a McDonald's over here. We get in and the patties were nasty, the buns were dry.
That's just because the comment sucks. Of the particular type of professional I saw
leaving
the parking lot
while
we're sitting at McDonald's.
Yes, that's what it was, right? Yes,
local wildlife,
exactly.
Yeah.
Specific professionals that are doing a very good job. But we, yeah, that was our last, sadly, the last memory of Pennsylvania. We were in a McDonald's with horrible food. Then we got coffee at a Dunkin' Donuts at the truck stop and then just drove out of Pennsylvania. But I need to go back. I need to go back badly. So you'll be seeing us at least once more this year, or not this year, well, 2023. You'll be seeing us within the year is what I'm trying to say, because I am in love with your state, man. You did a very good job of being a host of your state.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure having you. I mean, I had a blast, you know. I learned a lot from you guys too. You know, there was a lot, you know, it wasn't just the cultural exchange wasn't just one way.
Yeah.
You know, you guys brought some cool food down. You know, I love the tomahawk chips. Those butter things were phenomenal.
The butter tarts?
So,
oh yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty good.
Well, I just got to say, Chad, you're not a Canadian yet, but yet.
Yeah. Yet.
Once we get you up here, we'll have a whole list of places.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be pulling the same crap on you. Don't worry. When we get you and Tom up here, hopefully for the canoe build next summer, maybe.
We're talking in August is what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think that's when we're planning on the canoe build and everything else as well. So you guys coming up, we'll be able to drag you all over the place and show you some crazy stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like I said, you guys come down again next year. A week would be great because we could just take our time and,
definitely,
you know, because there was so much in Michelle. I mean, I showed you guys the iron furnace, but I didn't get to show you. There's so much in Michelle because I know Michelle even better than I do Tuscarora. And there was just so much I didn't get to show you there, you know. And another great thing was, you know, I was able to contribute to your forest. So I'm hoping,
you know. Yes, you did.
That all works good. So the only bad thing was it's
happening. It's working. we're not gonna describe in detail on the podcast what we're talking about here. But
right, I know nothing.
But I can tell you right now that the Department of Unauthorized Forestry is very happy with us. So thank you very much for that, and to your family for supporting that project. Thank you very much for that. With all that, I think that's the end of this episode. With that, I want to say thank you, Chad, and everybody at Strange Familiars for hosting us, having us in your crew for a little bit, and letting us enjoy the spookiness with you.
Awesome. Of course, it was great having you.
Oh, it was great having you. It was great being there with you guys. It was absolutely amazing. And I can say right now, without a shadow of a doubt, it would not have happened without Chad's logistical work and Rye's hard-ass nature of getting everything to happen. Like, Rye got us there. I don't drive, so the fact that Rye was willing to take the toll of driving 12 hours one way and then 10 hours the other, luckily the trip back seemed to go a little faster than the trip there.
There was no traffic on the way back once you got past Scranton, and then it was just open road.
It was a little smoother for sailing. I could actually nap. But thank you so much for everything you guys did for this episode to happen and the previous episode. So thank you to both of you. And we'll be talking to you again when Strange Familiars drops our episode. So folks got to check out the Strange Familiars podcast. Chad, where can they find the Strange Familiars podcast?
You can find it on strangefamiliars.com. It's on pretty much every caster that you use, you know, your podcatchers, you know, just look up strangefamiliars.com. Also check out the Etsy shop, because Tim also does fabulous artwork.
Beautiful artwork.
Yeah, so that's on, I think, Dark. His Etsy shop is called Dark Holler. Dark Holler. And then I could be wrong about that, but all the links are on strangefamiliars.com. Also, he is a musician and does some awesome music with his band called Stone Breath. So that's another thing to check out. And then you can find me on Ruck Rabbit Outdoors, which we don't have a website, but we have the Instagram account, YouTube account, and we run the Etsy shop where we sell the wool, Tom's knives and axes and other gear that we repurpose and try and put into people's hands to be used. So
brilliant. So again, just to clarify, strangefamiliars.com, folks, you can check out a lot of the other podcasts, and they have a Patreon, I believe, as well.
Mm-hmm.
You have Patreon for Strange Familiars. Is that just patreon.com/strangefamiliars?
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep.
So check that out, folks. Support their podcast. If you like anything paranormal, spooky, cryptozoology, all that kind of stuff, check out Strange Familiars. You can find it on strangefamiliars.com as well as patreon.com/strangefamiliars. And if you want to learn more about what Chad does with the outdoors, check out Ruck Rabbit Outdoors on Instagram and YouTube. And of course, if you want to support him, you can buy some really cool vintage outdoor gear over on their Etsy. With all that said and done, thank you folks for tuning in with us. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed these last two episodes regarding our Halloween special that was recorded in the Pennsylvania mountains. So thank you everybody for joining us for this. Hope you enjoyed. We'll see you very soon. Happy Halloween. Well, folks, that's the end of the episode. And of course, you heard in there me mentioning a part two. This is actually part one. Part two is a bunch of the audio that we recorded while we were down there at some of those very interesting places, as well some FLIR imagery, some FLIR video footage that we have. All of that will be getting uploaded to Patreon. So if you want to check out the rest of our Halloween content, our spooky investigation research into the Appalachian Mountains of Pandemonium, of the bridges that we were talking about in this episode, all those places, and a little bit of history of Gettysburg and everything else, go over to patreon.com/CanadianBushcraft later this week, because we're still trying to catch up on all this footage. It'll be up by the end of this week. It'll be up in the first few days of November. So with all that said and done, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And of course, be safe out there while you're trick-or-treating with your kids or yourselves. And of course, happy Halloween.